Welcome to Radio Survivor. We're here for the love of radio and sound. I'm Paul Reese-Mandel.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Waits.
And I'm Eric Klein.
So today, we're going to talk about video, but video as it relates to audio, to podcasting. It's kind of a hot topic if you are at all into the world of podcasting. And I think YouTube and video is sort of a hot topic for anyone who is interested in independent media.
Sure.
Because, it's become a go-to platform for a lot of people and a lot of creators, as we now call them.
The corporation Google made hosting what appears to be an unlimited amount of media material free to everybody on the earth, which, in contrast to if you're into podcasting, that doesn't exist. There is no company that's just letting you post hours upon hours of audio to the internet.
That's not entirely true. That's not entirely true.
It's changed now.
Well, no. So for a number of years, there have been a few services out there which you can use as a free podcast host. I believe Anchor.fm, now owned by Spotify, so it may be called Spotify for podcasters at this moment in time, is such a service.
My information's 7 years out of date.
Yeah. So there have been those services, but they're not predominant in the same way that YouTube sort of dominates what we think of as what is called in industries user-generated online video.
YouTube makes it very easy not to give them free advertising, and also, just to put it right out there at the beginning, a deal that they can rescind at any moment with the people of the earth, including American podcasters. They could take it all away. They could erase your account and violate nothing because they've given it to you for free, and they could take it away for free, which is sort of has always been one of the hobby horses here on Radio Survivor, where we try to talk to our listeners about the importance of keeping in mind what platforms are you using, and who's giving you the deal, and what is behind the deal they're allowing when you get to go onto the airwaves. We used to think of them as airwaves, and now the model is broken, but the way that media appears persists. Paul, I derailed you.
Yeah, I mean, free is, I think, and I think this is something which over time, you know, average folks have become much more savvy about. Free is very rarely free. It's always, there's always an exchange happening, right? And so we know that if you're, if you're watching YouTube, right, and you're clearly not paying for that, the exchange is that you watch ads.
Yeah.
And similarly, part of the exchange as a creator who uses YouTube is that ads are going to show up around or possibly within your content.
Yeah. And I think people are even also aware that when you're watching free YouTube, a lot of people are aware of the fact that you're also being data mined. They're learning a lot about you and your interests. We know that the things they give us on our page changes based on what we watch, and then all of a sudden there's an advertisement for something that we might have even been casually watching. They're tracking all of it, and that's also the deal for free here in the 21st century.
Yes, very often. But what's interesting about YouTube when we think about audio and podcasting, and to that extent radio, is that it's become now the most preferred and used platform for consuming podcasts, which is a fascinating turn of events, given that one, it's a video primary platform, and podcasting as it started originally was, of course, and has been an audio first platform, except for the fact, and this is something, Eric, I know you remember very well, that video podcasts have been with us since about 2005.
Sure.
The primary way to distribute podcasts can also be used for video. And I remember, in around 2005, 2006, when Apple first started supporting the ability to download and manage your podcasts as a consumer in iTunes. And they also released the video iPod. So it was an iPod with a small video screen where you could watch video podcasts that you would subscribe to and download.
And you would obviously not have an internet connected device in your pocket, but what you would have was a tiny screen. And it was still obviously like an audio first format. But yeah, there'd be a screen. I downloaded my share of video podcasts. They were bigger. They took up more space. They took longer to get onto your device. And you know, maybe as a consumer, I very quickly realized I preferred audio only because I didn't want to walk around staring at this thing. I wanted to walk around with my eyes on the sidewalk, as it were, as a consumer of audio.
It's so interesting how it all blurs together. And I know, you know, we're going to go through a lot of this in the episode today, but I'm also thinking about how YouTube is such a huge music discovery service for young people. And obviously the visual component of that is not really relevant. Sometimes it's a picture of a record spinning that's, you know, somebody's watching while they're listening to the music, and that's secondary. Or it might be, you know, just some a random still picture of an album cover. So it's fascinating that for many years, audio only content has been consumed on YouTube, you know, where the video doesn't matter so much. So I'm very excited to talk about all these blurring boundaries today.
And we should let listeners know again that, like, here on Radio Survivor, we come at this as people who grew up out of a community radio culture as well as a college radio culture. And I mean, that's really, so when we talk about podcasts here on Radio Survivor, we enjoy the medium, we work in the medium, and we create the medium from a community radio origin story. And that's sort of why we're why we come together here on Radio Survivor to talk. And Paul, also, though, at this stage in Paul's career, you've worked in podcasting for quite some time, and now you're very much a part of the
research.
Study data.
Research. So a research company, yes. I've celebrated actually 10 years professional in podcasting on April 1st. And I currently work with a company called Signal Hill Insights. And we're a research company, research consultancy. And part of what we do is we work on lots of nationally representative studies about the consumption of audio, other medias, and podcasting. And so we've done some research in cooperation with a couple of other partners in the last half year or so that helps to fill in some of this picture about how do podcast consumers, we would say, because we're now talking about audio and visual media, how do they think about video in particular, how they think about YouTube in specific? And so I presented some of this data recently to Podcasters Meetup here in Portland, Oregon, where Eric and I both live. And we talked about, you know, it might be good to share some of this with the listeners of Radio Survivor. You know, many of you are listeners to community radio or certainly podcast consumers. Maybe you're creators yourselves. And I think it's important to kind of understand how this is shaking out. I think there's a lot of anxiety amongst people who are professional podcasters or semi-professional podcasters, because thinking of podcasting as video undermines a lot of what they've invested in, or it seems to, or feels like it does.
Yeah. And having YouTube, a platform owned by the company Google, dominate the medium of podcasting is a new emerging trend that would trouble us, because we loved the idea of podcasts being nowhere and everywhere. No one controlled it. Everyone could create or consume it. Any podcast app had to sort of, you know, agree to this version of podcasting where they, you know, no app could stop another app from hosting a pod, not hosting, but allowing.
Well, yeah. So basically, you can, as if there is a podcast feed, as it's called, if you publish a podcast with any major public podcasting platform,
The way anyone podcasts ostensibly existed for the last 25 years is the way Paul is describing it right now.
Anyone can ostensibly build a podcast player and use it to listen to your podcast.
But all of a sudden, YouTube changes that 100%. Now, if you publish your podcast to YouTube, that's where it is, and that's the only place, unless you put it somewhere else.
Yeah, and it's interesting that some podcast hosts have started to build tools that to exactly help you achieve that, to take your video podcast and turn it into a regular audio podcast available by an RSS feed, and then host it on their platform. So there is sort of the round trip there, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. So right now, I'm going to talk about some data from a study that I worked on called the Download on Podcasts, and it's something which Signal Hill does in cooperation with Cumulus Podcast Network and Westwood One. We do it semi-annually, so spring and fall each year, and it's been done since, I actually don't know how long it's been done now I think about it, because it's been done since way before I joined the company. But at this point, the last version of the study was October 2023, and we asked, podcast listeners, people who listen to a podcast at least once weekly, what is the platform you most prefer or you use most to consume podcasts? And right now, more people say YouTube than anything else. It's not a majority yet, and that's an important point. It's still a pretty diverse landscape, but the top three are YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. And if we were to turn back the clock 10 years ago, Apple Podcasts would have been number one. We turned back the clock about 5 years ago, Spotify slipped into number one. And now as we go forward today and going back to about 2022. So it's a very quickly emerging trend. YouTube has become number one. 28% of podcast listeners say YouTube is their most used platform for consuming podcasts. Spotify is number two at 15%. Apple Podcasts is number three at 12%. That's a lot of growth, right? And it was sort of persistent last year, and we've seen it again since about 2022 that YouTube has slipped into the number one position. And then we talk about where do you find podcasts, right? So that's a question that we asked. And we worked on another study with an organization called Sounds Profitable. They're an industry group in podcasting. We are their research partner. And it was a study called Sound You Can See, which was released at the end of last year, in the end of 2023. And so we asked, aside from personal recommendations, which of the following ways do you find your podcasts? And a nearly half of podcast consumers said they find them on YouTube.
Yeah.
48% said they find them on YouTube. The second most popular way, again, this is after personal recommendations. Personal recommendations are still kind of the number one, which is interesting. Searching the internet.
Your friends and family tell you to listen
exactly.
to something.
Friends, family, colleagues, somebody in your social circle, essentially. Yep. Telling you to listen to something. But people are finding them on YouTube. And I think that's something you alluded to earlier, Eric, right, is that YouTube is this finely honed, constantly updated discovery algorithm, kind of suggesting new things for you to watch based upon ostensibly what you've watched already and it seems like your interests are.
I don't know if you can answer this, but, I think about there's so many podcasts that aren't on YouTube, right? So what slice of the podcast universe would you guess is on YouTube? And I'm sure it depends on how you define podcast too, which right. I'm sure and we'll continue to talk about.
And the reason why Jennifer's question is so funny and interesting is because if we were talking about Spotify, I don't know, some amount of Spotify podcasts might be a walled off Spotify only podcast, but
very few anymore.
But the rest would be podcasts you could podcast from any app, including Spotify. But YouTube is unique. YouTube would only show you YouTube content. So if it's on YouTube and nowhere else, it's you can't listen to it on Apple, for instance.
Yeah, and so that's an interesting question. And so, I mean, we really can't answer the first question, Jennifer, because it's very difficult to data mine and figure out easily what on YouTube is a podcast. YouTube does actually at this moment support the ability to label something as a podcast.
Yeah, that changed. That changed about around the time you did this study, I believe.
Yeah, it changed. Like, it's sometime last year in 2023.
Yeah, all of a sudden you could create. I was a user at the time, posting podcasts at the time, and all of a sudden you could create a list and call it a podcast. It blew my mind because you still weren't creating an RSS feed. It wasn't audio only. Other people couldn't hear it anywhere else. But YouTube let you call it a podcast. It sort of changed the definition of podcasts forever in a way.
Yeah. And in that study, I was just mentioning the sound you can see. Like, we did ask people to tell us what are their top three video podcasts. Hmm. Right. So ostensibly on YouTube. And when we went and figured out the top 10, they were all podcasts that were available as audio or video. Right. And it tells us two things. One is that there is that overlap. Right. And we asked the question for the stuff that you watch on YouTube. Do you also consume it on audio? And 60% of video podcast consumers said yes. That they sometimes listen to something that they otherwise also watch on YouTube. And so meaning listen to it on Spotify or Apple, right? Podcasts or Pocket Casts or Overcast or any number of other different listening platforms. So, you know, it says to me that you know, folks are a little savvy. They get this. And there's lots of use cases for why you would do this.
Right. Sometimes they're sitting at home and they watch it on the screen, but sometimes they're driving in their car and they...
Right.
They listen to the audio.
And specifically with YouTube, unless you subscribe to their premium offering, you can't have the media going while you have a lock screen, right? So if you're in the car and you're in, you know, you'd have to keep your phone basically on.
Yeah, no maps and YouTube. Right,
exactly. Can't have it on the background. So that's a great use case for being able to use audio specifically. And then we also asked the question, you know, if your favorite podcasts move from your favorite platform to a different service that did not offer video, and these are video podcast consumers, would you continue consuming it on the new service? 82% of people said yes.
They try to go find it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, which also tells us that someone who uses video podcasts, who consumes a lot of video podcasts and is principally doing it on YouTube, is not necessarily loyal to YouTube so much as they're loyal to what they like to watch. They're loyal to the creators. They're loyal to the programs.
At least in their heart, right? Yeah. Because I wonder, Paul, if the 80% of people who answered that question would actually do the heavy lifting of making the effort to find that show that they used to like that's gone now. Because some of them just would accidentally move on, sort of. They'd find something else to remember.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would, you know... I think the argument would be that it's likely the creator would give someone a heads up and it wouldn't just all of a sudden disappear. But yeah, I mean, it depends on knowledge. But given that a very, you know, that people who consume podcasts on video on YouTube are also using other apps.
Sure.
Right. So when we talk about
Google Podcasts,
well, because it went away.
Yeah. It's, that's another, personal anecdote about podcasting.
Yeah. So when we talked to video podcast consumers, so people who said that they watched a video podcast in the last 30 days, we asked them what other services did you use to watch a video podcast actually? And they also said, yeah, I've used Spotify and other things. So, you know, they are using other platforms. They're, you know, it seems like, and again, when we talk about most used, does not mean the only used. And that's an important thing. People are using other platforms to consume podcasts in various ways. But when we say, what do you use most? Now YouTube has taken that top slot. But it still remains a very diverse ecosystem of different places to find and play your podcasts, both audio and video. But It is interesting that YouTube has quickly jumped to the fore, you know, and I think a lot of it is due to some of the most popular shows that have, you know, in many ways gotten a lot of press in some ways in the most recent time. So one of which is New Heights with Jason and Travis Kelce. We might also, I believe it's Travis Kelce, who is also, you know, Taylor Swift's boyfriend. Okay. Right. So professional football players, Travis with the Kansas City Chiefs. Right. That is a video podcast. Right. It is filmed in a studio, is distributed as audio, has jumped in to be one of the most popular podcasts in the U.S. and also a video podcast. You know, and then we have another show, which I think has become much more popular in the last year and is also originates as video, is This Past Weekend with Theo Von. Yeah, is another one. Is that we have a lot
talking
of
talking about comedy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think, you know, that's brought more attention and discover. And again, an easy place to share and discover this stuff is on YouTube.
Can I just say something about being someone in their now late 40s who's been doing this for as long as he could? It's become so easy to make and post video. Mm-hmm. The friction is disappearing so quickly. The cost of buying equipment, the amount of space it takes up on your machine compared to how much you have available. 20 years ago, when I was in an audio only world, that was simply because the people that were employing me and myself as a hobbyist could not afford to be a video producer. It just wasn't available to me. And now it's just so easy to include a video in your audio. You know, your talent, as they say, are still sitting down in front of microphones, having a conversation. The format of what they're talking about remains very similar to what was available 15 years ago in a podcast only universe, but you can just run six cameras on those two people talking, and it's so easy now.
Well, and I'm thinking about the way we're recording this podcast right now.
Right.
We're recording it over a video conferencing system. So
not available to us when we started the show.
Yeah. So we are recording a video podcast. We just don't choose to post it on a video platform.
I am not camera ready, folks.
Not camera. Well, you never know. But I mean, kind of back to some of the questions I was asking Paul earlier, it also makes me think about podcasts like our podcast. There's a whole universe of podcasts who aren't posting their video. So if you have, you know, a large number of people, especially young people who are discovering music and podcasts through video platforms like YouTube, does that then put you at a disadvantage if you're a podcast like Radio Survivor that solely exists as an audio only podcast?
I would say unequivocally, yes. Now, it is not the case that young people don't like audio or don't go looking for audio and aren't consuming audio right now. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but pretty much the largest segment in terms of age in podcast consumption are young people. If you give me a quick moment, I can probably pull up that data in front of me.
I might, maybe I'll, do you want me to?
So 41% of weekly podcast consumers are ages 18 to 34. Whereas 29% of the podcast listeners are 35 to 49 and 30% are 50 plus. So
it's a double-edged sword in my opinion, because one of the superpowers of audio that we now have lost, if we're now in a video first framework, is that you could have a face for radio, but you could also, people's voices don't age as fast as their forehead wrinkles do. And you really end up being judged more on your appearance than is fair in a video first world. And yes, when you're as gorgeous as Travis Kelce, it's not a disadvantage. But for a lot of people who might be hoping to speak into microphones and listen to each other because they want thoughts and ideas to be first, or would be at a disadvantage if they have to show their face.
Well, I'm curious about, you know, these video podcasts on YouTube, etc. I'm sure it's a wide variety, but I would imagine there are some where it's not video of the podcast host. there might be other sorts of graphics.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. So there's kind of two additional threads that we can pull on here. So in the Sound You Can See study, we asked respondents, these are video podcast consumers, which of the following types of podcasts do you watch on video? By far, the most popular, most common are like conversations and interviews. So 79% of people said they're basically watching that. Number two, way in second place, is like a coaster creator monologue. So somebody who's, you know, just simply speaking to the camera.
Which would be the similar back in 20 years ago podcasting land. Most conversations were conversations, and every once in a while you'd have a monologue.
Oh, and those still exist.
Yeah, and they would do quite well. But they, I mean, in my listening habits, I would eventually tire of them.
Yeah.
And move on to someone who is learning something new from a new person talking to them. That's always sort of been where the
It's become emergent, yes. And then number three, though, on video is short clips, highlights of from a longer show or podcast that are less than 15 minutes.
There is YouTube superpower right there.
Right. And right so there. an interesting finding from this same study was we did a little subsection on Joe Rogan specifically. Now, when we conducted this study at the end of last year, Joe Rogan was still basically to consume entire episodes of his video or audio, you had to be using Spotify player.
Interesting.
So his YouTube channel was simply clips, 10, 12 minutes each.
Can you say a little bit about Joe Rogan's position in the industry
in
2024? Because it changes all the time. And he's
still about the same
8,000-pound gorilla as well.
Right. He's ostensibly the most popular podcaster with the most popular podcast any way that you survey people.
But it's all boys of a certain age?
No, not all. not necessarily. Cool. In order to have that level of predominance, he has to have wide appeal, and he does. The biggest segment of his audience are men, you know, roughly under the age of 40 or 44. But that is not it. It is not. It's not as if that's 90% or something like that.
Got it.
But the interesting thing that we asked about Joe Rogan, right? And we found that 47% of people who consume video podcasts has watched Joe Rogan on video. 47% of video. So that cannot just only be men who are 25 years old, right? Sure. But then asked them, well, do you watch full clips or do you watch episodes or highlights? 18% said they watch full episodes. 30% said only clips. 52% said they go back and forth, right? So, and again, a typical episode of the Joe Rogan Experience is like 2 hours. Like, they're very long.
The
and then we asked
all that time.
And then we asked this question, where do you watch the Joe Rogan Experience on video? And again, until just a few weeks ago, speaking here at the beginning of April of 2024, you could only watch or listen to full episodes of Joe Rogan on Spotify.
And they paid for that privilege.
Right. It was an exclusivity. But recently they decided to distribute it more broadly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's money to be made elsewhere, too.
Just a few weeks ago now, they started posting full episodes on YouTube and on any podcast app. But we asked, where do you watch Joe Rogan? 71% said YouTube.
Okay.
And at that moment in time, there was no way that you could watch a legitimate full episode of Joe Rogan on YouTube.
Piracy.
We definitely see that people will post the audio from one. There'll be this sort of, or they'll do commentary videos and things like this. And only 29% said that they watch it on Spotify. So what I take from this is that Joe Rogan is a bit of a unicorn. You can't really generalize a lot from that. He's a brand. He's well known. So when we ask questions of like, you know, do you listen, you know, what are the podcasts you listen to or whatever you consume? People write Joe Rogan. 10% said they watched Joe Rogan on TikTok.
Uh-huh.
You know, and what they're experiencing is likely either Joe Rogan's own TikTok channel, and so which would be again TikTok style short videos from his show, or other people post, right? There's lots and lots of this sort of reposting that people do on, say, Instagram.
TikTok is such a
reels and on TikTok and things like this.
Well, and one of the weird things about TikTok that's just almost unknowable from the outside, unless you personally have an experience, that I'm like, TikTok does have long form live streams that are just very, very unique. Very, very weird. So I can imagine there might be somewhere in the corners of TikTok people posting the whole Joe Rogan show.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably just, that's too marginal, I'm going to say, to really be, to have an impact on something like this, where we, you know, it's these are large surveys, you know, cool. But not so large. So the video survey was 1,155 podcast viewers, and then we, you know, so it's likely in that's a rounding error. I think it's mostly going to be people finding Joe Rogan in variety of different ways in their TikTok feed, which could also include people who are like reposting or doing commentary on it or something like that,
right?
So, you know, so in that way, you know, it's kind of a unicorn. But what it also points to is the power, as we're getting to, of not having necessarily do full content, right? Having to do 2 hours or 1 hour of your podcast, but that if you can find good clips, good segments, good elements to share on YouTube, that may bring you audience. And you have to think about, you know, you have to think about what is your goal in terms of building an audience. Why are you doing it? There are some folks who are building audience so that they can sell ads, which is complicated on YouTube and probably not something we want to get into. There's some people who are building audience because they're using some kind of crowdfunding like Patreon. And there are some people who are doing it simply because they want to connect and they enjoy it and maybe hope that it builds into something, but they're not sure what that is, right? That's a lot of podcasters. And that's also, you know, so figure out why you want to build an audience and what is the good of that for you and for the audience
is going to
inform your strategy.
Can I tell you an anecdote about it being a podcast producer who posted things to actually what I was doing at the time was I was helping out a friend with a podcast that they were producing that was a interview program with musicians who would be largely well known in the Gen X listener community. And I was posting short form video to YouTube, and mostly what I found that was if I managed to post a video that got thousands of views, which was thousands of times more listeners than the podcast had, those people they'd stayed on YouTube. They didn't, none of them, as far as I could tell, probably zero, were converted into listeners. And I would imagine that there's something not dissimilar for large projects that like people find out, they hear it, but it's a very specific person that watches a 1 minute clip, loves that 1 minute clip, and then goes and looks for that show. I might be the only person who has ever done that.
No, I don't think so. But no, I don't think so.
No, somebody.
It's the difference between having an audience and having a view or a listen, right? An audience stays with you. An audience, you know, has some degree of loyalty because and the loyalty comes because you're satisfying an itch, right? You're scratching an itch for them, versus somebody who's like, oh, that's interesting. That was great. 10 minutes, whatever. You know, I think it is possible. And I know that it does happen. I don't have any numbers on it. There's no,
It might have been an experience.
Comprehensive research yet done. But, you know, it does help to build some audience off of YouTube. It's still an open question, right? And the way I look at it is that, you know, it's likely an additive audience rather in terms of have a YouTube audience, right?
Paul, I would like to reset for the radio audience. You're listening to Radio Survivor. My name is Eric Klein. With me is Jennifer Waits. And Paul Riesmandel worked on a study that, why we're talking about it now is because it appears as though we have lived through a sea change in the way people get their shows, their time-shifted radio. YouTube has now become the number one podcasting platform, which has all sorts of
implications. Number one most used. We always have to put in our provisos, right?
Which has all sorts of implications. You know, Radio Survivor, we've been talking about this stuff now. I don't remember the time. how long ago we started.
Nearly 9 years ago.
9 years ago, we started talking about this. And like all these platforms were there. YouTube was a huge part of the media landscape 9 years ago. But something significant has happened. You know, podcasts existed 9 years ago and they'll exist. But we're in a very interesting moment where this, the way that people get their audio has changed so much recently. And I'm just happy, Paul, that you have real information to share with us, since I go by the seat of my pants and I have an experience as a listener and a producer, an experience of one individual, but you've done the homework, you've done the research. And Jennifer, you have your experience as a someone who studies college radio and who continues to uplift the culture of college radio, both past, present, and future.
Yeah,
imagine that you have something funny that you think about all of this.
Yeah, well, and you know, throughout this conversation, I've been thinking about what is a podcast, and we've talked about this on Radio Survivor before. What is the definition? And you know, I think the same thing about college radio, and I've become much more inclusive because studying the history of college radio, I understand that college radio has taken on so many different forms over the years, including forms that involve video. So, you know, college radio stations were some of the first radio stations of any kind to use webcams. So you had radio shows that had a video component,
in the 90s, possibly
on their 90s. Website. And then also, you had a lot of college radio stations that were involved with cable systems, including campus cable, which campus cable was more likely to have a video component that would involve video of the broadcasters doing their radio show. So I've visited some radio stations where they had the option of turning on a video simulcast so that you could watch the show. And, you know, so I think about college radio kind of being enmeshed in that. But then I also think about radio culture and how we've seen big radio shows over the years that have then gone on cable television, like Howard Stern. You know, that was a radio show, and then suddenly a lot of people were probably discovering it, watching it on cable TV. And it makes me think about these modern video podcasts, and do any of them remember things like Howard Stern? Like, do they model themselves after that?
You could certainly find clips of Howard Stern's television show on YouTube.
I mean, and his show, which is now which has been on satellite radio for nearly 20 years now, exclusively is also video. Like it has been, I think, since
like Conan's show.
The beginning, nearly. And they post clips to YouTube. I believe you can watch full episodes, you know, through the SiriusXM.
Do you know what else is amazing though about how far we've come or what is happening now is, as a user producer of content, YouTube is making it easier to post copyrighted music. It's possible to imagine where maybe live is not as easy, but you can have a air check of your radio show. And you could upload it to YouTube as a producer, and basically YouTube will let you know, okay, no, that Celine Dion song, this happened to me very recently, that Celine Dion song is blocked worldwide. You're not allowed to post that. But every other copyrighted song that you just posted is A-okay with us. Like,
provided as you don't expect to get any revenue from it, which sort of makes sense.
Except for now, there's some wiggle room there.
There's always wiggle room.
Yeah, it's changing. It's interesting.
But there's one thing I do want to address, though. And that I want to go back to sort of like form and content, right? Format is that I think that, you know, the place where YouTube gets complex for podcasters is when we get away from this sort of what we're doing, the discursive, conversational, talk show kind of format. And you get into things like audio documentary. And you get into these other forms where it's not basically an hour or two of people talking to each other in a studio or across, you know, on a Zoom call, but where there's lots of reportage, lots of editing, right? Where you may be only working with a microphone, and you may only be working with a microphone for good reason. There may be people who would subjects or interviewees, guests who might not talk to you if you had a camera.
Right. As a producer of content, like of news content like this, you might have access to someone and be able to professionally produce a radio as a one person producer, where if you needed to have the same subject be interviewed on a video, you'd need a crew of four people, three people. And right. that would change the dynamic. Now you're a crowd, and maybe that changes how much information you get from the person you're interviewing, because they no longer feel as comfortable now that they're outnumbered, among many other reasons why audio is such an interesting medium for taking out into the field.
To further complicate it, though, when we ask people what is their, you know, what are your top video podcasts that you like to consume? Number 10 in that list was The Daily from the New York Times, which is, as it sounds, a daily podcast. If you go to that YouTube channel, there is no actual video. It is just
screen.
Just the picture of their show art and the audio.
For them.
Well, and so to match that, you know, we also asked people in the other study, the download on podcasts, you know, do you prefer to have when you have a video podcast, do you prefer video to actively watch, or video you minimize and listen in the background?
All right.
And half of people, 18 to 34, said they actually prefer to just minimize and put it in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it isn't that people don't like the video. It seems like they like to have the option to have the video, which is very different. And when we asked them, you know, why, which we did in the Sound You Can See study, you know, they basically tell us we like to see people's faces, right? It's right. very simple. We like to see, and you know, when we looked at, we asked people often to sort of elaborate, and so they write in, you know, full rather than making a selection, they write in a full answer. And a lot of people say, you know, sometimes that helps you pay attention. Different people have different modalities, different, you know, their ability to pay attention to audio. Some people are less good at that, and they do better when being able to see people and have something to fix on and faces and such. I'm sure there are some accessibility issues in that at times. It's nice that YouTube, of course, will automatically generate captions. But as of now, Apple Podcasts is automatically generating transcripts for podcasts that are consumed there. So we do have a lot of that accessibility coming to the audio only format. What we come up with is a complex picture, I think, but if you're thinking about, if you are a podcaster or a radio right. producer, right? Someone in community radio, college radio, and you're thinking about, you know, what do I do? If you want people to be able to discover what you do, YouTube is a good place to be. And especially for people who are coming into podcasting, somebody who has started within the last right. year
it's,
or two.
It's a place where you can find an audience. You might be able to find more of an audience quicker than if you posted it simply
strictly
to your
audio.
RSS feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a better discovery platform.
Right. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be all in, meaning producing everything as video.
Right.
And that there is opportunity. A lot of it, though, is, as with all of these things, experimental. Because when we talk about this research, it's important to always note that we try to make it representative, meaning when we surveyed video podcast consumers, we tried to make sure that was a representative sample of podcast consumers in the United States, right? It means age and gender, race and ethnicity, right? So it's very important, and it's not just anyone that we go out and we're very active in balancing it out so that we can say this. But what we're not doing necessarily, and that we did not design this particular study to do, is look at a niche audience. Right. So if you are working in, say, the world of like queer horror drama, this data may or may not be representative of the folks that you want to be speaking to and with. Right. And so what the audience that you may engaging with may actually have different preferences than what is broadly we find across the spectrum of podcast listeners, right? Or podcast consumers. And that's something that I think to always to think about in that way. And it again, it doesn't mean that YouTube may not be relevant, but it may be a less important platform where people may be less interested in viewing. And people, I think, who select to listen to audio drama are clearly selecting audio drama.
Yeah, and that, I mean,
specifically that was, not choosing, you know, to watch television.
That was my hunch. Movies. That was my hunch that I was sort of trying to tease out earlier, is that I have a hunch, just my own personal opinion, unproven scientifically, that if you find an audience on YouTube, you're sort of stuck with the kind of people that love to flip channels on YouTube. And if you find your audience, you know, through publishing your zine, you're much more likely to find an audience of people who like to sit still in a room with a piece of paper in their hands that can't, you know, that can't be hyperlinked to other websites. And so, you know, you want to do the work to develop the kind of audience you want in the kind of way you want them to find you.
It also makes me think, you know, YouTube shows up at the top of so many of these lists for music discovery, podcast discovery, just because YouTube is so huge. So I would imagine that YouTube is used in so many different ways by so many different people. And it might be background noise for some people.
Yeah,
some people might be using it like television. They don't watch television anywhere else except YouTube. So, yeah, I would love to see more studies about this. This is really fascinating, Paul, and I think it's kind of the tip of the iceberg.
It is, and I want to recall an interview we had several years ago with a friend of mine, James Cridlin, who is the publisher of Pod News, so it's a daily news source on podcasting, but he's a longtime radio expert with a lot of experience going back to the BBC. And he noted that in the UK and Europe, there's a decent segment of people who consume radio on television, that if you have cable or satellite television, often radio stations will have a channel there. And it is,
it's sort of the automatic
auditory.
It's easier to get reception on your television. Sometimes you get the station clearly and loudly, and it's already plugged into your hub sound system, perhaps in a way that maybe radio would be more complicated.
And at this point, people are more likely to have a television in their living room than a radio. And what's also emergent, what we're seeing, is a sign that people are consuming podcasts that are companions, that are available directly in some place like Max or Disney Plus or Netflix. They'll be companion podcasts to different series or movies.
They used
to
call that DVD commentary, folks, back when Grandpa.
Except it's not, because it's not synchronized with with the video.
My favorite DVD commentaries would just ignore the screen and just go for it.
They'd end
up recording a podcast, essentially, back before podcasts.
But those can be consumed now on your television, and we're seeing that as an emerging trend.
Yeah, we have so many different portals to this content. You know, things like Roku, things like gaming systems, you know, it makes me think of our whole series of articles about your insert name of platform here is a radio, where we talked about, you know, I think I wrote one about TiVo was my internet radio, and you can go on and on, that the content is in so many different places and we all have different preferences for how we access it.
Yeah. Yeah, and so many kids now are not going to be going off to college with a radio anywhere in their backpack, but they will still have their laptop and their phone, and they can access what we grandparents will call radio through these other devices. Paul, I wonder if you're available at all to talk about, like, is this bad news for the podcasting industry? Are people upset?
I mean, so I would say that there is a mix of feelings within the podcast industry.
Right. And I guess I should have asked you, I should have qualified that, like, we here on Radio Survivor tend to care more about community producers who are, who are smaller and who come out of a community radio professionalism, or even the college radio professionalism. But I'm asking you, Paul, about what developed as the podcast industry in the last 10 years, or is it, you know, people that get paid a living wage full time, they get healthcare, they get vacations, and they work in podcasting.
So, you know, I think that every major kind of network or publisher is trying to figure out what their strategy is. If they, and some already have it. Some are already have popular YouTube podcasts.
Right.
I think in some cases there are some networks that have both YouTubers and podcasters, and they're trying to teach each to do the other, trying to see how do we take the YouTube video maker and make podcasts. So, and you know, not every YouTube video works as audio only, is in the proper format. So how do we perhaps bridge that person over to audio and vice versa? So I think everyone's trying to figure it out.
You have me so thinking funny. Now about YouTubers, Paul. And I mean, when people are answering questions in this study, do some people think YouTuber content is podcast?
By and large, no. That was one of the things we really wanted to find out, because if I go back, say, to a year ago, as sort of this news of YouTube being predominant was starting to set in, like we saw it really come out and emerge in 2022, so 2023. I did hear from many veterans in the podcast industry is basically, are people just dumb? Do they not know what a podcast is? And therefore, you know, they think that Mr. Beast
Mr. Beast, who does documentary style, youthful, energetic, running around all over the place, doing an adventure, you know, but highly edited, highly, you know, clear children's content. You know, it's so funny you mentioned Mr. Beast. I just posted a video to YouTube of the 90s television show MTV Sports. And I think yes. Dan Cortez doing the dumbest show on MTV in the 90s has a lot in common with Mr. Beast, the most popular YouTuber in the history of the platform. It's really interesting.
Very rarely is something utterly new, right?
Yeah.
I looked at every single answer of people writing in. And so when we have asked them their favorite, their top three video podcasts, they write them in. Okay, so we have to kind of read that and be able to map that onto existing podcasts, right? It's quite a bit of work. It is partially machine. We could do part of it with machines, but a lot of it is a human has to double check all of that. And we found that almost there were a few titles of things that were clearly, I don't think we would call podcasts, very rarely mentioned more than once. So out of 1,100, so you take 1,144, we had not even put in three. So there's a good 2,000 podcasts listed in this survey. It was just barely a couple percent of anything. So there are plenty of names that we couldn't figure out. Like they would write someone's name and we don't know who that was and we couldn't Google it or figure it out. I mean, you know, but by and large, no, what people listed, you could arguably call a podcast. And we asked them, how do you know it's a podcast? Number one is podcast is in the title. Number two is you can see people talking in the microphones.
Okay. Yeah.
Like all of the sort of indicators of that people told us that, you know, it is a podcast all make sense to anyone who's in podcasting. And again, it's a particular type of podcast, which is principally people talking to each other in a studio or
the ones that were
monologuing.
A one take conversation.
Ish.
Maybe you edit out the parts where they can't remember
or
the name they're thinking of. But
it could
really
have segments or something. I mean, there's no, but it is sort of
chronologically,
you know,
coherent.
Yeah. So 54% of people said that, you know, they know it's a video is a podcast because the word podcast is in the title or name. 51%, it's because they see microphones. It looks like it's in a studio, some version of that. 49% said it's because the creator or host is known for podcasting. Like it's a brand. It's something you're known for. And a third, roughly 30%, said it's because it's also available elsewhere on like an audio
this
platform.
This is so fascinating to me because this is, you know, saying that podcasting is a genre.
In a way, of course.
But there's so many genres within podcasting.
Right.
So it's interesting that on YouTube or on video platforms, it's a specific genre of podcasting. Yeah. That people interpret as a podcast.
And it's not serial. It's not the radio NPR style docudrama, highly edited news. It's this other thing. It's
because
two guys
it's not
talking.
Because it's not really on YouTube. I mean, in part, people are responding to what they know based upon what they've experienced, not based upon what they imagine they might experience in the future.
Or also, I'm thinking about the early hobbyist blogger style podcast that we've talked about on our show.
Right.
A very important part of podcasting history and, you know, our podcasts, but not as, didn't become as corporatized as some of these other forms of podcasting.
Right. Jennifer, you're referring to a conversation that we had. Gosh, I can't remember who we interviewed, but
Jennifer Hyland Wong.
Thank you. Jennifer Hyland Wong taught us about these early sound recordings that were posted to the internet where women largely were talking with other women, sometimes about knitting, sometimes about tech. But
And these types of podcasts still exist, but, you know, we're saying they were very, very connected with early blogger culture.
Right. Blogs.
Yeah.
Blogs. You know, 7 years ago, we spoke with somebody who talked about how they wanted to make sure that their audience data wasn't just being hoovered up by Facebook and used against them later on. So they were trying to create their own platform for their audience to engage with their community radio.
So you're talking about Ken Friedman, station manager at WFMU, community radio station, Jersey City, New Jersey.
And so back then, back when Ken was trying to design this alternative, Facebook was the big tech giant that was the stealing audience from community. Is something similar happening now with YouTube? Is YouTube essentially stealing audience from podcasters, or is it a two-way street this time?
I mean, stealing audience, we'd have to clarify what that means, right? I mean, if your audience is watching your stuff on YouTube, then, of course, they're getting whatever data YouTube is able to get from that transaction. So if you call that stealing, then that's it. But does
data mining your audience.
I mean, you know, but it seems as though if you are an audio podcaster right now, and so you are not currently putting things on YouTube or other platforms. We didn't even get into, like, say, TikTok or Instagram. Then you decide to start putting things on YouTube. Most of what I see, again, this is hard to study and say definitively, but all the signs point to me those are new audience members.
Right.
So that is somewhat additive, and that people may, your audio listeners may go to YouTube if there is some other additional dividend, meaning they can see something that they didn't see before, or, you know, you're doing something visual now that, you know, but arguably it is mostly additive. I can't say that it is 100% incremental, but that it is mostly additive. That's what it seems like.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I think we're probably going to continue it for at least 10 more minutes, 20 more minutes on the podcast version of Radio Survivor. But you've been listening to our radio edit, which goes out on community radio stations, some college radio stations, some internet radio stations all around the United States, North America, and a small fragment of the world that we're very proud of. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Eric Klein. Paul Riesmandel produced today's episode, and Jennifer Waits is also a co-producer and co-host. And you can find our radio program on radiosurvivor.com, of all places, a website, a .com website with our own brand's name on it, as well as wherever you get your podcasts, unless it's YouTube. And you're really not going to find very much of Radio Survivor there unless I get to work this week and make our YouTube presence a little more robust. Thank you so much for listening. And if you want to check out the rest of our conversation, please do find us on radiosurvivor.com, where there'll also be show notes for today's episode, where I'm sure, Paul, maybe you'll post some more information about this study that you worked so hard on.
Yeah, I'll put links to these studies.
About how YouTube is becoming the dominant podcasting platform in the year of our Lord 2024. Thanks so much for listening. See you next week. How are you guys doing? Do you want to continue for the podcast?
For a tiny bit.
Sure. Okay.
I'm curious, Eric, because you're alluding to our YouTube channel. I'd be curious for people listening right now on our podcast, like, would people listen to Radio Survivor through YouTube? Is that worth our effort to do that?
Oh, yeah. And you know what I didn't mention during the show, but it's big on my mind and it's such a big deal. And Paul, maybe you have some insight. The worst thing, the best thing, the worst thing, the best thing it's a double-edged sword about YouTube is that prominently displayed, incredibly vitally important to everyone's opinion about your work, view count. The view count on the screen is so much of how people perceive your work. And a podcast goes out and you can imagine that you're in an audience of thousands, if not millions, and a YouTube goes out and you can see, wow, I'm the 300th person to listen to this thing. It must be dumb, right? Or I must be very special. It depends on what kind of person you are. But that viewer count is really like a very big deal on YouTube.
It's a public metric, exactly, yeah. Which podcasting doesn't really have. I mean, there are sort of charts of top podcasts, but you know, that's limited to a top 100 or 200 out of the, you know, the millions available. That's certainly there. You know, Jennifer, I think the question is not to our audiences here, would they watch on YouTube? I think the question is, are there people on YouTube that would listen to our show?
Yeah.
And we're not talking to them right now, and we can't poll them. You know, at one point, so some episodes of Radio Survivor have been uploaded to YouTube, not by us.
Oh, neat.
For instance, number 120, when we talked about part 15 broadcasting, license-free, legal, low-power broadcasting, 6 years ago, somebody uploaded that, and
how's it
has 10,000 views.
What?
Whoa.
That's amazing.
And what did they use for the imagery?
Just they made their own card. It's just wow. Static. We have experimented and uploaded some things over the past, so it's been many years. As far as I can tell, mostly, you know, they get some views, but by some, I mean like, you know, 70, 80, but we have really just done not very much.
We just didn't put in the work. I've been very recently putting in a lot more work on YouTube, and it's really fascinating how the platform rewards consistent effort. And if you do something consistently, you really can see, even though it's an incremental change and maybe it doesn't change the amount of money you'll make by anything, you'll never make a second penny, but still the more you upload, the more chance you have of finding an audience.
I mean, absolutely, that's right.
Can we go back to the part 15 upload though?
Because I want
to
find that.
I'm curious who, and you don't have to like out the person, but I'd be curious how it got 10,000 views.
Where is it?
Views.
Review. Wait. Where?
I suspect. I mean, it's the algorithm at work, I suspect. I mean, it's basically the way
it found.
I
would, there's I radio nerds on the across the world. There are radio nerds.
Is it a radio nerd who posted it? And, you know, I would imagine there are comments on it, too.
There are many comments. How many there are? 31. So it's not a ton for that many views.
Was it a controversial episode? Like, is this fans of part 15 or is it people who are like,
this is all either.
Oh my God,
people...
There's a YouTube channel called Radio Survivor. It's not us.
Okay. It's just people. They're mostly positive, benign. The name of the channel is End 8080 Highway. What? They don't even have an avatar. If I look at all their videos, mostly some about radio, some about boats. Their most popular video is about looks like an inflatable raft of some sort or boat.
This is fascinating.
That's 100,000 views. Ours looks to be the second most popular of all the videos, and it seems like nothing has been posted in 5 years. So,
wow.
You know, it's the algorithm. It's, you know, and again, it feeds on itself, right? And
we should have posted that episode, though, obviously, right?
Well, and so the interesting thing is with YouTube now, they have made that easy. There is an RSS ingestion tool, so we can just put in our RSS feed and it'll auto ingest and put it into our feed. So we don't even need someone to do the hard work of putting it into like iMovie and sticking in a static card. YouTube will do that for us.
And does that ingest the past episodes or just everything going forward?
Offhand, I don't know. I think I'd have to look at it. Probably you can tell it what you want to ingest, is my guess.
I'm glad we're talking about this because during the radio show version, I was thinking about, you know, if you're a podcaster and you decide you want to dip your toes into YouTube, how difficult is it if you, you know, have an audio only podcast that you're putting out there? Like, what's the work involved with then putting
right now
up?
Virtually none. If you want to make it nicer, then you need to, you know, be, I believe that a lot of podcast hosting platforms that you pay for, many of them have a YouTube functionality, so they'll take care of it for you as well. And then, you know, but if you're at all capable to make video using, you know, say iMovie or any number of other, I think there's now online free browser-based ones. I have no, you know, and slapping in some graphics, you could do that. But, you know, it seems to be not terrifically difficult, I think, at this point in time.
I can see how this really could be a part of a podcast marketing plan, so to speak, you know, because, you know, Eric, you were talking about posting some things and then not being sure if the people who watched on YouTube then transitioned into being podcast converted listeners. But, you know, with so much of marketing, it's about having all these different touch points. So, like, maybe somebody sees you on YouTube or sees your post on social media or a little video clip on tip. Like, all of those things add up to people maybe going to subscribe to your podcast feed.
Sure. Yeah. Podcasters, I think, can be precious about podcasting in the same way that I think somebody who is a hardcore Instagrammer is precious about Instagram. So I don't mean to call out podcasters specifically, but that I think it's natural that you, when you put so much effort and time and often money into something, that you are, you're protective of it and what it means to you and its definition to you. And, you know, there are reasons why someone who is a podcaster and not a YouTuber, right? In many cases, or not a video producer or not an Instagram or a TikToker, right? And so I think it can be challenging to have to think about these other tools. And the answer is you don't have to. I mean, it is not a requirement. I think podcasting has come this far and continues to grow. We have to remember that podcasting today, 47%, the numbers just came out last week from Edison Research, 47% of Americans age 12 or older have listened to a podcast in the last month. So we're nearly, you know, millions of people, nearly half the population.
Can I ask a dumb question now that we're in the podcast and you can just go, Eric, that's too dumb, I can't answer. How many people watch television? Because I was just having this
offhand, I don't know.
This argument with my 18-year-old son who does not watch television, and we live in a household with very little over-the-air television. And he was trying to convince me that no one in his generation watches over-the-air television. And I was like, I don't know. I think a lot of you do, I think. But I don't know. Maybe you're right.
You know, and those are not numbers that I know off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It's
changing so much. Well, Netflix really is dominating, and YouTube is dominating culturally. But is it still?
I think a lot of people don't realize that they're seeing television very frequently. You know, like going to, our 18-year-olds aren't going to bars yet, we hope. But, you know, go to a bar and there might be something on a television. Like there are places where you might be catching television. Sure.
And he's also not a sports person. I was trying to explain to him, like, you don't understand, like, if you watch sports, you watch television.
Or if you watch an award show. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff that live, you know, the live presentation is everything.
Sure. But, like, you know, I'm a Hulu subscriber right now. And, like, the Oscars is available on Hulu. And there must be a lot of it's getting streamed now.
Yeah. So we call it linear television in the media industry, which is basically live television. And it's below 50% of total TV usage now in the United States, just below. Wow. This is data that's as of August of 2023. YouTube and Netflix, so basically streaming services, which there's no great definitions, but like on-demand video that you could watch on a computer or a television, is about 38% of total TV usage in the United States. So I think, Eric, your child's thoughts about it, about, you know, their generation. They're probably correct, you know, that they don't watch much linear live television, although it's sort of growing again. You know, some of the bloom is off the rose of a lot of on-demand premium right. services, because people started saying, well, now I'm paying, you know, $10 for this, $15 for this, $20 for this, whatever. And so a lot of that is shifting to what is called free, you know, free, like Tubi or Pluto TV, ads, free ad supported streaming television.
90210 all day long.
Which much of it is yeah. is linear, right?
And I
meaning you can't stop and start it. You can't watch on demand. You just tune in like it were a cable channel, only exactly. it's on Pluto.
And I saw an article claiming just in the headline, I didn't read the article, that Gen Z is watching a lot of Tubi just like while they're also, it's their third screen.
Yeah, like, but that's how a lot of people have consumed television, yeah. right? And you sort of alluded to that, Jennifer, that, you know, people will turn it on in the background while they're also reading, browsing the web, doing work. You know, TV as background is has been common for a very long time.
That's how my mother, my mother doesn't listen to the radio, but she's got that TV on
yeah.
in the kitchen. Just
constantly
is going. Well, yeah.
yeah.
She's tuned out.
The View is radio in a lot of ways.
And soap operas are soap operas are audio first. And, yeah. you know, they're a very old genre that started in radio. And the action happening on the screen is really secondary. And, it, right. you know, they're yeah. meant for a distracted audience that's
cleaning. I'm in the kitchen cleaning.
Yeah. And doing work myself. Around the house. And watching them, I showed a soap opera once to a class that I was teaching when I was teaching popular culture, and it was so painful for all of us to have to stare at this soap opera and pay close attention in class, because it wasn't meant to be attended to in that way.
Right.
You know, it was, yeah.
Yeah, and we need to remember that, you know, even if we say that, you know, if we note that Apple Podcasts has now gone from being the number one most used podcast consumption platform. That's, you know, let me pull up the percentage
well,
again.
I'm gonna assume
I have it right, but
I'm gonna assume that what you're about to say, Paul, and you, I hope you'll correct me with the real, yeah. but that like the podcast, Apple Podcasts didn't lose the audience. It's just that YouTube gained it.
Mostly. I would say yes, because, you know, if we talk about when it was number one, which is only, we only have to go back to July of 2019. Right. Right, when it was 30% and now it's 12, it did actually lose some share as the most popular. But a lot of it, again, is that there was net audience gain in that time. And so, again, YouTube is likely driving a lot of what is new podcast consumption, meaning it's hard to say, you know, it's hard to come up with the alternative world that might exist where they're not YouTube. But it does seem as though YouTube is driving the growth in podcasts. Is at least one of those drivers that's bringing more people into the medium, because it's simply now a predominant media consumption platform, period. You know, if we talk about any sort of audiovisual media, YouTube is a destination, and a very significant one. So we shouldn't be surprised then. That it should drive for podcasts. I think the interesting thing will be, I mean, certainly to watch as it develops and watch as see if there's other new emergent forms, you know, are that people are able to do. You know, can people make essentially sort of like what you were talking about, Jennifer, make audio dramas that are sort of like soap operas, so as easily consumable. Only in audio, but also in video with something to watch. Maybe someone's out there thinking
AI,
about how to do it or just stumble on it.
Like an AI generated puppet show.
Yeah, right.
Basically, that you'll just have little talking heads yabbering their mouths to match the audio that you uploaded.
But it would be interesting. I mean, I think we should actually look at, should we upload, you know, do the auto upload of our episodes to yeah. YouTube? And we don't have, because for us, the way, you know, we are essentially, you know, we're essentially non-commercial. We are not really a profit-driven enterprise. We're here basically because this is something we love to talk about and support. Although we do, you know, get some support that we're very grateful for from our Patreon supporters, but we're not driven to monetize every single minute of this show. There's probably low risk. And that's the way I've sort of put it to people. is like, what is, you know, there's probably low risk for you to experiment with YouTube and seeing if there are things that could do if you have the time to do it, or you know, and that is not insignificant, right? For many, a podcaster or podcast, you know, small podcast company or small group of people working together, they may be pouring every minute they have to spare for podcasting into the podcast. And so anything else is additional effort they don't already have.
And again, it might be very devastating to their ego to see that they uploaded it and it's got 12 views for, and it's been there for 3 years, like,
right,
which is entirely possible with our podcast. But at this point, we've established that, like, it wouldn't hurt our feelings. And then you would never, it's very funny. Yeah. You'd never know. I have talking about my personal YouTube channel. I posted a few things, on a whim 6 years ago that took off by accident and God knows how. And now, like, the majority of the views on my channel are random VHS tapes I uploaded that I didn't know people were going to like.
Right. Yeah.
You never know what's going to take off. And what's
although the most popular video on our channel is one I made a number of years ago about a turntable I modified, and it's got 37,000 views.
Which shows to go you, if you put more turntable reviews up, you'd have a tidy little income stream.
And there, I believe there are comments on that I've not, you know, I haven't looked at comments on that video in at least a year, if not longer. And at least one comment, I remember one commenter, or maybe more than one commenter, was like, basically like, you're not doing a good job of engaging with your audience. You're never going to grow this channel.
That's very true.
You're a terrible YouTuber.
I was a terrible YouTuber, to which I would say guilty.
Yeah, well, and I want to add to this conversation then, just for the time capsule, I watch a lot of YouTubers who are currently experiencing what I can only describe as a professional crisis.
Yes.
Because the platform has changed, and what was once for them a good living has turned into an albatross around their neck, and they are all complaining. They post videos about how sad they are, and those get the most views. And it's clearly a bit of an object lesson for Paul Riismandel's favorite hobby horse on the show. Like, if you don't control your platform, you don't control your platform. You don't control your platform.
I mean, no one controls everything. As somebody, you know, who is now a partner in a business that requires clients, we are dependent on those clients to come to us and pay us to do research, essentially. And like, you know, people also come to me, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? I say, great. If you could find us someone who wants to pay for that research to be done,
that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Then we'll do it. Right. And when we do, like, I mean, the great thing is that we work with folks who are willing to do that. You know, what you
sort of just revealed the big flaw in science in the United States is that someone's got to pay for it.
We do live in capitalism. You know, when it comes to having a business with clients, and, you know, is that it's good to have more than one client. It's good to have more than one source of revenue and not to depend only on one. I think I can say this now because it's been many years. I remember early on in my podcast career when the number one advertiser in podcasting was 3 months late in their in paying their bills. Yeah. And it was an all hands on deck emergency to deal with that, because they were the number one advertiser podcast. This goes back, you know, almost a decade, I think. And so they represent a significant portion of the income, and to be in arrears for 3 months. And Jennifer, you run a small business, you know, you work with distributors, or I don't know if you work with a distributor or not, or what, you know, you self-distribute, but there's certainly some clients of yours who are who purchase more than others, and if they were to be late in a payment, it can cause problems. And so being a YouTuber means you essentially have one client,
one boss, right? Yeah,
one boss, and their terms are what are, you know, and it's not only their terms, but obviously because there is an algorithm and there's this other intermediation between you and the audience, you know, there is an opportunity for, there's precarity in that.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing,
a lot of them do have Patreon.
Yeah.
So there's a conversation that they admit to out loud on their YouTube channel that I watch, was like, should I switch to Patreon 100%? Is that a better move for me? I'll just post everything to Patreon and then have 100 people who watch my videos there, but each of them pay me.
I mean, the economics of Patreon are interesting. Well, I just saw some data the other day.
But also,
I
was watch a podcast. Out for having only Patreon.
Right. Again, I saw some data. I think it was at the podcast conference I was at last week. You know, and that like the top Patreon supported podcasts were, you know, in terms of their audience size on Patreon, tremendously smaller than the biggest YouTubers.
Yeah.
But funded to its significant degree, and by significant degree I mean upwards of $1 million a year.
Yeah, having a staff that's paid.
Yeah, right, and able to pay everyone probably a decent middle class livings. Right, yeah. Probably nobody making Joe Rogan money, but everyone making fine middle class incomes for their efforts.
I'm going to guess that somebody working for Joe Rogan is not making enough to afford lunch out. Just one of the people.
Yeah, I don't know. That I don't know. That I know nothing about the economics.
Some unpaid interns at the Joe Rogan factory.
God, I hope not. I hope not. Unpaid interns are
is that,
not be used.
Is that, yeah, is that the early 2000s? Am I exposing again my generational trauma?
Yeah, I
Paul,
think so.
Thank you so much for sharing, Jennifer. It was so fun to get to... This topic endlessly fascinates me, and I'm really glad we got to talk about this media landscape that we all live underneath and on top of. It's really fun.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all that research, Paul. It's very fascinating.
My pleasure. We'll continue to kind of track it.
And I think we are going to upload more to YouTube. I think that's...
Yeah, I think we should just do it.
Yeah, just dump it all
on
there.
See what happens.
Yeah. Fun. Stay tuned.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.